Good morning, everyone. Story County Board of County Commissioners meeting will come to order. Anyone carrying any phones or PDAs of that, if you put them on silent now for the duration of the meeting, appreciate it. And Phil, all rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I hope everyone had a nice Easter holiday. Sunshine and blue skies in Virginia City. No wind up there. It's for everybody except Commissioner Jones.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Item number three, discussion and possible action, the approval of the agenda for this day, April 7, 2015.
Mr. Chairman, if you don't mind, I'd like to ask you continue two items, and those are 27 and 28, and those will be continued to a date-specific May 5th County Commission meeting, and those are the tri-zones.
Also, that's 5-5-15.
What is that? That'd be May 5th, 2015, here at the Story County Courthouse. And that's items 27 and 28 related to zoning and the IC zone.
Okay.
Thank you.
It's been requested that we continue items 27 and 28, May the 5th, 10 a.m. in this room. Have a motion to the effect?
I would make the motion.
A second.
Move to second. Continue items 27 and 28 May the 5th. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And the motion carries. Anybody else have any questions or problems with today's agenda? Mr. Nevin?
On item number 14, review and possible approval of the policy regarding refund of building permit fees. The agenda action item report incorrectly states that it's the Story County Public Works, and it should be Story County Community Development. Just a
okay.
Note for you.
So noted and corrected. Any other one? Anyone else? Okay. Looking for approval of today's agenda with the corrections, item number 14.
I would move to approve the agenda for April 7, 2015.
Move to second for approve today's agenda. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And the motion carries. Move along now to item number 4, discussion of possible action. Approval of the minutes for March the 3rd, 2015. Does anybody have any questions regarding the minutes for March the 3rd? Seeing none, call for a motion for approval.
I would move to approve the minutes for March the 3rd, 2015.
Move to second to approve the minutes for March the 3rd, 2015. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
I said aye.
Did you? Okay. Motion carries. Item number 5, discussion of possible action and approval of the minutes for March 17th, 2015. Does anyone have any questions regarding March 17th minutes? Hearing none, call for motion.
I move to approve the minutes for March 17th.
I'll second that motion.
Move to second to approve minutes for March 17th, 2015. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And that motion carries. Moving along now to the consent agenda. Does anyone have any questions regarding today's consent agenda? Seeing none, call for approval of the consent agenda.
I move to approve the consent agenda for today.
I'll second that motion.
Move to second to approve today's consent agenda. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And the motion carries. All right. Moving along now here, item 11, discussion only, no action, no public comment, committee and staff reports. Do I have anyone on staff that needs to get out of here quickly? I can switch you up first. Seeing none, Mr. Miller, would you like to start us off today?
Yes, Mr. Miller.
Lockwood Community Center.
Well, this would be for the Lockwood Perry Ranch Park.
Very good.
And the water has been turned in on by Mr. Mike Nevin in the Works Department, and we're going to have some events there. It's going to be the National Night Out. It's going to be up here in Virginia City. And then Senior Awareness will be in Virginia City at Miners Park. National Night Out in August will be at the Lockwood Park, Prairie Park. And there are some other events coming up. They had a walk, 5-mile walk with some kids. My wife was on that. She can tell you more about it. And there's going to be some other events, campouts, different things like this. The park up there is getting well used, folks. Thank you for everything that you commissioners have done to increase the park, and especially Mike Nevin for all the help he's given me. Thank you.
Richard. Thank you, John. Mary Lee, do you have anything to follow up with?
Sure. Well, she's got a lot.
Thank you.
Good morning, Commissioners. How are you?
Good morning.
I'll start out because he mentioned the walk. Every year when the children are on their spring break, the very first day, the first Monday of spring break, we take them on a hike, Dan Hall and I. This year we took them up Lagomasino Canyon, which is Long Valley Creek, 2.5 miles up and 2.5 miles back. And they had a ball. We had 6 kids and 4 adults. It was colder yesterday, so we didn't get the kids out. We had it scheduled for about 12, and about 6 of them didn't show up. Great. Had a good time. It's a rough, rough piece of country. So we could only go 2.5 miles up and 2.5 miles back in 4 hours. That's how rough it is. Crossed the creek 4 times, hopping on rocks, carrying kids. It was interesting. That was good. Our biggest event that's coming up for our community center is we have an open house this Sunday from 5 to 7, a catered dinner, tri-tip and chicken. We're inviting everybody in the county, everybody that works in the county, everybody that lives in the county. We have a really lovely building at this point. They've done a lot of rework on it. We have just a good look to it now. It really looks like it fits in the Western theme of everything. We have 2 new windows that have already been ordered for the front of the building on the north side. Those will be installed at a later date. They're not in yet. So we really want to showcase what has been done so far. So we're offering this catered dinner by the Mustang restaurant here in town. They're catering the dinner for us. We are going to showcase a lot of the things that we do up there. We have schedules of our we have bunko, we have cards and dice, and we have games scheduled. There are birthday parties, anniversaries, even weddings that have been held up there in that building over the last year. We do a lot with that building, a lot of meetings that are in there. We have our CERT meeting, our search and rescue meeting is up there because it's a combined county meeting, north and south. And our neighborhood watch meeting is always there. Plus, LCC has their general meeting monthly there for their board of directors. So we get a lot of use out of our building. We'd like to showcase it, and so that's about the end of my report. I have one more thing to say to Hugh. Hugh, we got a personal phone call from the 501c3 board. That particular man, Joseph, that called me, I said, when we got this letter and you wanted 3 more things from us and you wanted to know how come our bank account wasn't much, I said, we didn't have anything when we sent it in the first time. And he laughed. He said, well, I want to commend you 2 ladies that put this together so good, because he said, you did it better than most lawyers sent them up here. It's one of the best examples of being set up for the first time that we had ever seen. So thank you, Hugh, for all your help, and I thank Terry for all of hers. Thank you so much.
My God, that's the first, Mary Lou.
Thank you, Mary Lou and John, for all the hard work that you do in your community.
Thank you.
Mr. Griffin from Community Chest, Library.
In the interest of title, we have our big event Friday, and that's all.
Okay. That's good. Saw you on Channel 2 last night, so that's good. That's good publicity to get that out there. That's good. Sherry, do you want to start us off here?
Good morning, Commissioners. Sherry Nevin for the record. Just a reminder that we've got residential dump days coming up here in Virginia City, May 1st and 2nd. And in Lockwood, it actually starts this weekend, the 9th through the 11th, 16th through 18th, and 23rd through 25th. The Virginia City Senior Center has been recently painted. The county purchased the materials, and we had labor donated from the Nevada Division of Forestry Eastern Sierra Conservation Camp. Saved us thousands of dollars in labor costs. They got done in just about a week. If you haven't had a chance to take a look at the building, it looks really good. It was really in need of paint. So one last step is to get the sign. Sign's being redone, and that'll get back on the building, and then we'll be good to go with that. I'm also happy to report that we received a community development block grant for the Lockwood ambulance. That was in the amount of approximately $114,000. That grant should be ready to go around the first part of July. So we were successful with that. We did not receive funding for the Tahoe-Reno Industrial Center Utility Master Plan. So it was a tough job this year serving on the advisory committee, but I was happy that we came out with at least one grant. So I think that's really all I have today.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Can you take this with you? Stacy, do you have something from the community development today?
I don't have anything.
Ask me your name. Ms. Chapman?
Nothing today, thank you.
Mr. Nevin?
A couple of brief things, because Hugh's going to take up most of your agenda later on, it looks like. We've been in the process of completing some crack sealing on Waltham Way. We've got that all resealed, and that's in anticipation of us going to bid here soon for the chip and cape seal projects. I have been in contact with our engineer Far West, have some assistance from Greg Lyman there. We met with a gentleman at the University of Nevada who does pavement management for the state, and specifically assists NDOT in developing specifications and whatnot. So we're on track with a spec that will work for what we want to accomplish on some of our countywide roads and streets. So we'll be in the process of finishing that specification and the bid documents, and hopefully be able to go to bid here next month or sooner. So look to that. We're in the process of doing the same thing here in town on some of the streets that we anticipate doing here locally as well. So you'll see us around. The roof project here is, I would say, as far as the roof is concerned, about 99.9%. They've got a little section up here on the southeast corner to complete. The weather's been not too cooperative the last few days. In fact, Sunday we had a little wind event and picked up some of the material over here on the north side, but we were able to get it corralled, but not before it did a little bit of damage to a local waitress that works at the Sawdust restaurant. So hopefully Watershed Systems has some insurance, because that's actually their product, the old material is we have nothing to do with it, but we went ahead and did corral it and tied it down so it didn't create any other additional problems. I think that's all I got to say for now. So, Hugh, that was brief and sweet. What do you think?
Yeah, Jeff. So you said you're going to do some crack sealing and stuff like that in town as well?
Yes.
Do you know what kind of schedule or time frame or anything like that?
In fact, they're down on D Street today doing some of it on D.
Is there a possibility that you could get a hold of maybe the ones in Chin's board?
I've done that before, and they've been reluctant to pitch in and pay for the material, so I haven't pursued, you know.
Well, I think this might be their next best opportunity if these guys are already...
We're doing this in anticipation of the chip and cape that we want to do, and we'll do that on our sections in the Virginia City Highlands, which is the first mile of Cartwright and all of Lowestown.
You're subcontracting this out?
Yes, this would be a contract.
Give me a phone number, and I can make them call.
Oh, we're doing the crack sealing portion of it.
All of Cartwright, all the way to Cartwright?
No. We're only responsible for the first mile out there.
Yeah, right. That's why I'm asking.
But last year, when we were doing it out there, and for the last 2 years, I've been unsuccessful with getting any commitment from the homeowners associations out there to purchase the material for us to provide the labor to do the project.
I'd like to get the phone number of that contractor that's doing
it. We don't have a contractor for the chip and slurry yet, Jack. We haven't gone to bid for that yet. Yeah, that's what we're in the process of getting all those documents together. So, but I'll keep you in the loop.
Yeah, would you?
Please? You betcha. Sure. Anything else?
I think there's a new board in place in the ones now, so I think maybe it'll be a little better cooperation.
Yeah.
With your department.
You know, I think we had anticipated about as memory serves me, about a $13,000 materials cost.
And that was with an outgoing...
And would have been nice to do it when we were out there prior, but, you know, I couldn't get him on board.
Commissioner McGuffey's recommendation, we should reach out to them again now that there is a new board. So.
Yeah, if you've got a contact, shoot it to me.
Yeah. Cool. Pretty good. Thank you, Mike. With the fire department, Chief Haynes.
Nothing, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Great. The Planning Department,
Mr. Osborne. Thank you. Just a few things. I want to give us all an update, starting on the 342 matter down there at the bottom of the hill in Gold Hill. And Comstock Mining's been working down there for the last month or so, doing their excavation work. They are right now. If you go down there, you'll see a hole about the size of this courthouse room, 40 feet deep and about the dimensions you see here around us. And that's where they have been excavating all the way down to bedrock beyond all that loose sand and unconsolidated ground that exists there before. That does not exist there anymore. And so Chairman McBride and I happened running each other this weekend, took a little drive down there and watched them do their work. And Gary Luce, the principal engineer for Comstock Mining, who's the one that's engineering all the mine pits and everything per the state requirements, is literally watching that project every minute and photographing and documenting every move that is made. Because of the type of ground that's being used there and the consolidated ground, he has to, by law, sit there and literally babysit the entire project to make sure it's done exactly appropriately. And, of course, that's at Comstock's price, so that is quite expensive for the mine for that to occur. Essentially, what's going on down there is they have gotten down the bedrock. They are capping the shaft. I had talked to you at prior meetings that the problem is if you have a shaft that's capped at bedrock, but capped up in the sand area, no matter what kind of cap you put on top of that, it's going to shift down just like if you were to dig a hole on a beach, and it will ultimately fail and fail again and again and again. So what they're doing this time is they went down to Bedrock, they're capping the shaft at Bedrock, and they're doing that by backfilling K-rail, kind of the old traditional method, and Comstock Mining is putting I-beams down there literally as we speak. They're filling those with concrete, and that whole thing will have a concrete plug in it. And once that's done, then their crews can go and build that ground back up by compacting it with the appropriate type of aggregate, and that will be built up to about the original road height, probably in about a week and a half to 3 weeks, give or take in that window of time. And once that is done, then Comstock Mining can begin actually building the road. While that's occurring at the same time, NDOT is reviewing Comstock Mining's road plans. Comstock has submitted those, and NDOT's reviewing them, and that includes both of the Phase 1 project as well as that Phase 2 project we've talked about over time. And what you'll see in that, I do want to let us know when that Phase 1 is completed, that means by June 6th is the target date. The traffic will be going both ways between Silver City and Virginia City, and it'll be done in a very nice, pretty much a nice loop. Even with a temporary shoe fly, it'll be a nice drive down there, and you'll feel like it's a regular type of route. $3 million, by the way, is bonded for that as well. Before I go into the next item, I want to let us all know I did hire a planner, and he'll start on the 13th. He's coming from NDOT. He lives in the Highlands, and he has a tremendous amount of planning background and experience as well as transportation planning with NDOT. So I think he'll be a great asset to our team when we're looking at things like USA Parkway and Waltham and C Street and parking and one-way streets and things like that. I think we'll really benefit from his services. His name is Jason Van Havel, and he lives up here and, again, is from NDOT. Probably want to let us know, Pat and I and our team have been really watching our assembly bills and activities going on down at the legislature.
Let's cover that in a separate agenda item, okay? We've got an agenda item for assembly bill.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. I want to let you know the BLM is almost finished with a resources management plan. They're going to accept comments again till April 27. That'll be the due date. So all comments have to begin regarding all BLM lands and their master plan for any type of thing that you can imagine occurring on those lands. I did submit on behalf of our team to the BLM our position on wind energy behind Virginia City up here literally to our west, and asking if the BLM exercise its most extreme or most restrictive alternative that it provides, one alternative allowing wind energy, carte blanche, another alternative not allowing it, and some in the middle that deal with different permitting allowances. We feel the historic district is not an appropriate place for this, and so far the BLM does appear to be leaning that way in providing an exclusion, particularly just for this area here in the Comstock Historic District. And last but not least, I just want to let us know that May 7 and May 21 are our next Planning Commission meetings, and we'll be discussing tri-zoning, Title 17 updates, as well as a vacation rental here in town down on Union Street. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The controls of Mr. Gallagher?
Nothing at this time, Mr. Chairman.
Very good. Madam DA?
In the interest of time, I'll wait until next.
Very good. Special Counsel Morris?
Nothing to report. Thank you.
County Manager?
I don't want the roof to fall in, but I have nothing to report.
The Sheriff is noticeably absent. He's at the legislature testifying this morning. Mr. Dosen, do you have anything from the Sheriff's Office?
Moving
forward to today? No? Madam Clerk? Today? Have I covered everyone? Did I miss anybody?
Thank you, good.
Okay. Moving along now to, let's see here, item number 12. Board comment, no action, public comment. Commissioner McGuffey?
No comment.
Vice Chair Gilman?
Nothing today, sir.
And I, too, have nothing today. It's a trifecta. Moving along to item number 14. Excuse me.
13.
Discussion only, no action or no public comment. Discussion and direction to staff regarding legislation or legislative issues proposed by legislators or by other entities permitted by the Nevada State Legislature to submit bill draft requests or such legislative issues as may be deemed by the chairman or the board to be of critical significance to Story County. Specific bills will include AB 417 and AB 427, which staff has expressed opposition. Mr. Whitney, would you like to take the lead on this?
Yeah, let me start, Mr. Chairman. This will go a little bit more extended because I did not attend last Friday's briefing meeting except for about the first 20 minutes with Mary Walker and Associates because Mr. Morris and I needed to take a journey out and chat with the Tesla folks again. What was reported while I was there was this Friday is an important date. All bills have to be out of their first committee of origin. So now's the time to watch for some of the hijinks. We'll talk a little bit about that with particularly 417 and to whatever extent 427 here in a minute. The good news is from Mary's group and BUM is so far we're not seeing any shifting of funding burdens to the counties. That doesn't seem to be in the DNA of this session, which is a good thing. I'm going to talk now about one bill, ask Boston to come up and talk about another one, and then turn it over to Commissioner McGuffey and Hugh, who participated together with Austin at the Walker and Associates meeting last Friday. The one I want to speak to is AB 417. There are copies of a letter up on the rail if anybody's interested. This came out in very short order, and quite frankly, could have blindsided us, except, you know, our lobbyists caught this and made it, drew it to our attention. AB 417 was simply another pass by the Sunny Hills folks to come back in and say, hey, extend the deadline, you know, on this boundary line transfer by two more years. We did, you know, we had made it clear that there would be certain requirements before we would ever weigh in any way on that other than an opposition. And in my opinion, I'm just going to call this what it is. It was an in-run by the proponents of Sunny Hills and their lobbyist, Garrett Gordon. So with that, Steve Walker and Bunk Hess arranged for me to simply draft a letter to the chairman of the Assembly Committee on Government Affairs to, in essence, kill the bill. And we have been assured by Assembly Chairman Ellison that this bill will not make it out of his committee based on our opposition. So and we'll tell you we're going to continue to watch this and make sure it dies because they have ways of resurrecting clear up until the last day of session, whether it's through a, you know, an amendment to something else or whatever it may be. So we're watching this one. We also kind of got blindsided by AB 427. Austin, would you come up and chat about that?
Thank you, Mr. Whitten. Thank you, Chairman. Absolutely. There's another bill that went into the Assembly. It was called AB 427. It was known as the Comstock Mine Bill. It was Ben Wessner and some members of the community that actually brought it to our attention, and then going down to the legislative conference on Friday, that was actually one of their big discussion points, so we discussed that. And what this bill would have done was really, it would have been detrimental, and there's other legislation that exists like this in land use law that's really unfortunate, that says a county, a jurisdiction, a city, whatever, may not impose restrictions, covenants, conditions, special use permits, whatever, or even regulations that are quote-unquote unreasonable. And when you deal with that kind of language, it leads it up to the attorneys and the courts to determine what's unreasonable, quote-unquote. And when you get boards like this and you get public involvement in things, it's very, very difficult and sometimes nearly impossible, or if not impossible, to define what that is. And so it can be anything, and it's really pending what a court will say. Without talking about the case, I think a lot of this room remember that there was a major land use matter that we dealt with in this county that with legislation at the federal level that dealt with words like unreasonable, and it was very challenging for the Planning Commission, for my staff, for this board, and even for the courts ultimately to make a determination on how far Story County can go to restrict that use. And it was based on, well, the 4th District Court, where the 4th Court of Appeals says this, but it conflicts with the 10th Court of Appeals. It can really be a mess. And this bill, the county, the city, the jurisdiction would not be able to impose unreasonable restrictions on mining, period. And that's about it. So all of the work we did in this county, 18 months of work that involved the public, it involved state agencies, it involved mining interests, it involved multiple mining interests attorneys working on their own, it involved our attorneys, it involved NDEP, I mean, you can go on and on. To spend 18 months building an ordinance that I'm very proud of in this county that creates a balance between mining interests and the interests of the historic district and land uses that exist in our county. And really, I think we have achieved an ordinance that is unprecedented across the state of Nevada. It hasn't been challenged, and it really creates that balance that allows small mining, it allows mining at its large scale, all these to occur in the historic district and in other places while creating that balance to protect the area. I had submitted a letter, just like Pat had referenced, to Mr. Ellison from the Government Affairs Committee, and also copied it to Senator Settlemyer and Assemblyman Wheeler, and asked that this bill be killed, and the next day it was killed. And one of the things I added to that letter was that you can see in Story County, in the middle of the Historic District and the Comstock Historic District, there's large-scale mining occurring by Comstock Mining, Inc., that is open pit, it's all of the above, but it's regulated appropriately. It's been through cooperative endeavors between the mining company and the county, and this exhibits and exemplifies that you can have all different types of mining in the most restrictive environment and have a successful environment for both sides. Therefore, this bill that they tried to pass through the legislature is not necessary. So those are really the elements I wanted to say, but that bill is dead, and I appreciate those in the community that brought it to our attention, and I have expressed to those people that I am as well.
Thank you. Is there any questions for us?
Mr. Chairman, if we may, I'm going to ask that we deviate a bit. I did check with contract counsel to make sure this is okay. This is a standard template item. Unless we specifically know, we will be dealing with individual bills, in this case 417 and 427. We did, just prior to the preparation of the agenda, so we included those on there. But what I failed to do was remove the no public comment for these two bills that we know. So with your indulgence, I would request that you ask for public comment. We have representatives here from Comstock Mining, and we're discussing a mining bill. We have representatives or individuals from the Highlands here that may want to talk on either of these two bills. Again, I want to stress we cannot take any action. We did not agenda it as action, but Mr. Morris says that we can certainly entertain public comment on these two specific items since we agendized them.
Okay. Great. Well, why don't we start with AB 417, which was the Sunny Hills. Would anybody like to speak on behalf of that bill? Ms. Bard, come on down.
Nicole Bard, Story County resident, Highlands resident as well. Thank you, Pat, for that letter. Because I had also heard that Mr. Gordon was saying that the county was good with, you know, extending it. So I'm pleased that that was caught. So thank you for making those wishes known. That's all I have to say on that one. Just a question. After talking about these two bills, can I come back and ask a question on SB 81, or is now a time for me to ask the question?
On which bill?
It's a water bill. So
why don't we come back to that?
Okay.
We can stay here for one. We can come back to that. Anybody else like to testify on 417?
And the only thing before we move off of 417, again, thank you, Nicole, for your comments. I want to stress on 427, this one would have slipped past us, just another mining bill, so to speak. And it was because of Ben Westner and others that brought it to our attention. So if you guys see stuff out there, let us know so we can jump on it. There's 800-some-odd bills, I think, right now in the process. Right, right.
And in reference to 417, last year, I believe it was Commissioner Shevagin had asked that we go ahead and vote on it and just turn it down, voted down. And we were going to do that until we got contacted by Washoe County. Washoe County asked us not to vote it down because they'd taken a neutral stance on it. And they just wanted to just play out, just to go to its term, which will be June 30 of this year. If no action is taken by June 30, that bill totally dies. This was going to resurrect it. And We don't have any intention of showing any favoritism towards it. So they're out there because you've got property owners who own a lot of real estate in the Highlands area. You've got this Mr. Z, who we've never seen, but we know of. And there are other prominent individuals in Reno who own a lot of real estate, and they would like to get together with some of the well-known developers to develop a lot of that real estate out there. Well, it's not master planned for it. The Highlands residents are not in favor of it. It probably wouldn't affect many other persons outside of that neighborhood, but it's been our stance all along that until they can come forward and prove to the residents and get the residents on board in the Highlands that this is a viable neighborhood that they could cohesively out there, it's going to be this court's decision to go forward and not be in favor of this.
Yeah. Washoe can go ahead and do what they want, obviously. But I spoke with a couple of their commissioners last year on this, and they're not inclined to support it, even on the Washoe side.
They have a new board now, too.
Okay,
so that's the thing. We don't know what their new board would have in mind. You know, there's some changes down there. But if nothing else, if they don't try to sneak this in on as an amendment onto any other bill, June 30th of 2015, this bill is dead. So
who's giving them legs?
Gary Gordon.
Well,
is there a legislator behind it?
Well, no. It's a legislator is there to go ahead and bring any bill forward that his constituents would like him to bring. And since you've got a major property owner and you've got his lobbyists and developers who are interested in doing this, they're gonna. It's the legislator's duty to go ahead and bring a bill forward that's in the interest of people who have a financial investment there.
And let me answer, Nicole, if I may. It was a committee bill, which does make it hard to determine if there was an individual behind it. But if you read the fine print of the letter, it alludes to the fact that this may have been proposed with less than truthful circumstances. So I'd leave it at that.
Okay. Anyone else would like to speak on 417? Okay, let's move on to on 427 now, the known as in the halls of the legislature is the Comstock Mine Bill. So, Scott, did you want to speak on this at all?
I won't waste your time coming up there, Scott Chalk.
You'll have to get it. You'll have to, because otherwise the recording device won't pick up your testimony.
Scott Jalkover, Comstock Mining, Director of Business Development, fully support Story County's position on the bill being squashed.
Thank you, Mr. Joe Bevers. Anyone else like to testify on AB 427?
And again, thank you to a gentleman that isn't here, but I know his friend is. And Sean, would you please give our deepest thanks to Ben for bringing this to everyone's attention?
Commissioners, have any comments on these? None? Okay. Let's see here. Let's move along now to item number 14.
Well, I think we still have...
Oh, sorry. You want to come back to the water issue? Yeah, go ahead.
And then I think you and Jack have other items that were discussed last Friday.
Since this is on legislative actions, SB 81 is my understanding, and I've just glanced at the bill. SB 81 has to do with water. And I know that in our master plan, you know, water is very prominent in what we're doing in each of our communities. But I am just curious, are we watching that bill? Because if you look at the major change, which comes at the front end, which grants the water engineer very broad powers, and in light of the Highlands, more and more and more wells are running dry out there. And that's just because we're in a drought just like California. But my question is, are we paying, I know we're paying attention, but how are we following that bill? And short-term and mid-term, what's the impact of that going to be on our county? TRI, being a private individual enterprise, is purchasing water rights left, right, and sideways because that complex is going to need water for manufacturing. That's what it needs. However, the rest of the county and Virginia City gets its water from Marlette, and we're building the sewer plant, et cetera. But the rest of the counties, Mark Twain and the Highlands in particular, are going to be suffering, are currently suffering, and will continue to suffer. So my question is, are we thinking short and midterm what we can do to help those communities and what the impact of 81 is going to have on the county? Because as I read it, they will begin to meter our private wells for usage. Mandatory water restriction is imminent. So is that something that we're watching? I'm not opposed to it. I'm just saying, are we watching it? Is that something that we're making our community aware of that's coming down the pike? Are preventative measures being considered?
A lot of questions,
just saying. It's a big issue. It's a bigger issue than oil right now.
If I can start, then Austin will provide the details.
Yeah,
long story short is we have usually about a two-page list we work from. Boils down, takes, removes all the junk bills that we really don't care about. SB 81 is number two on our water resources list. The good news is, even though some think we have, you do have too many lobbyists, we need to fire all of our lobbyists, by hiring Walker and Associates, which actually you get two for the price of one, and Steve and Mary Walker. Steve Walker is a preeminent water specialist. This guy is respected throughout the entire state and actually throughout the West Coast in terms of water issues, water rights. He's brilliant. So the short answer, Nicole, is just we are all over this. As far as the nitty-gritty and the involvement, I'll defer to Austin because he's actually taken lead for us on this one.
Just one last comment. I'm not opposed to water conservation. I mean, it's a fact of life. We're running out of water. My question is, and selfishly as a Highlands resident, is, you know, we've got to start getting some information out there that we understand as Highlands residents and that the county understands what is the problem and what are potential solutions to it. And we need to be doing that very quickly. Sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Board. I'm going to just speak very briefly on this. SB 81 is a bill that would include all the things that Nicole brought up. One of those could be, as a state engineer, one of the main elements would be able to create an area such as the Highlands or any water basin or a portion of a water basin as a risk management area or a water management area. And by doing that, the engineer can do a lot of things necessary to make sure that that water is there for people that are in the area or for ranching uses, farming uses, whatever uses. And so some of the most extreme is the engineer could require metering of wells to make sure that wells aren't exceeding the 2 acre feet of domestic well usage. Another extreme factor could be is reducing 2 acre feet down to as far as 0.5. acre feet. That means if you have a domestic well, you'd have enough water for the interior uses of your house and probably still enough for gardening, but that would be about it. 2 acre feet would be about enough water to 2 acres of lawn. That's about how much 2 acre feet uses. And so that could happen. Another thing, an engineer could come in, including the Highlands, come in and just say we're putting a moratorium on this. There will not be any more well issues permitted for this area. Period, until something is done, a GID is created, or there's some kind of a measure done at the local level to mediate the situation or mitigate the situation. And as far as local level mitigating situations, I think the master plan element that you've been involved with, Nicole, is a huge component, and we have major issues in the master plan as far as dealing with water. And we're looking at all kinds of out-of-the-box ideas as a planning commission, as staff, and as with the public, is coming up with ways to mitigate potential future problems in the Highlands, particularly with the 1 acres and 10 acres and the Mark Twain area as well. And some of those, without getting into all of the weeds on this, is things like, you know, allowing people to purchase more properties and consolidate them into one parcel for less straws in the ground for possible other alternatives they may be able to do with their land. Others might be posing moratoriums or a general improvement district that would be run outside the county, but maybe helped by the county, things like that.
And I think it's safe to say on, you know, on items like this, it's a fine line that we're trying to walk. You know, you can have too much governance where you're actually taking away land rights of certain people that may have bought under the assumption and presumption that they could build. And at the same time, we've got an obligation to make sure that there's a safe and sufficient water supply for the existing residents out there. I think as staff, the one thing I'd want to add and stress is we are certainly all ears if either the 10-acre POA or the 1-acre HOA or both would like to, you know, sit with us and say, you know, this is what we think. I mean, we kind of have a tendency to use them as our litmus test, if you will. So if we can get involvement there, it would be deeply appreciated.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Austin. Okay. Mr. Gallagher, you and Mr. Rebecca, who wants to go first?
Austin pretty much covered what I was
going to
say.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Some of the things, there are some bills there that are of particular circumstance or have particular circumstances in Story County. Also statewide events there are 1, 2, 3, 4 bills that are applying to collective bargaining. This has pretty much been a ongoing case each and every legislature, and since now that the legislature has got a Republican majority, things are happening with collective bargaining just like they happen in the state of Wisconsin. The governor declared that the union's pretty much for teachers union, which got him in hot water, but he had a recall and survived that. So there's a lot of things out on the table on collective bargaining, one being that you know, what the county has got to absorb as far as when people do collective bargaining, either with some of the unions. And one is we have a month's one bill says, well, we have 1 month of leeway. That's going to be extended to 3 months. One bill says, let's just get it out altogether. That's being debated. There was another bill that said, which is AB 289, says that the county has to be substantially stable, financially stable, in order for them to commit to collective bargaining. And, of course, there's another one that says that's being heard today on local government that the Board of County Commissioners has the right to negotiate whether or not they want a union or not. The pendulum is, you know, kind of swinging a little bit this way. So we're kind of looking at that to see where all of that legislation changes. One bill is going to get through. We don't know where it's going to be, but at least there'll be some changes, we hope. A couple of interesting ones is that there was a Rangeland Fire Association bill, and this was predominantly because of Elko County. Previously, there were ranchers and whatever when there was a lightning strike or whatever out there. The ranchers could have put it out. BLM, for the most part, forbid them to do anything with it, which constituted probably about plus 500 acres of fire that ruined the sage-grouse territory. So now there's a bill out there that says that ranchers and those people can form an association to go ahead and fight fires. We had already talked about the boundary line and mining restrictions, which was good. There's a couple more. The Secretary of State portal bill. This has been a Ross Miller bill from the inception, although he's no longer Secretary of State, and he did not make it till Lieutenant Governor or Attorney General. This is where the state of Nevada takes over pretty much all the licensing and pretty much tells the counties this is what is going to happen. And, you know, we were at one point worried about spending up to as much as $200,000 in software to put this in place, and the state of Nevada would basically keep the money and charge us a fee and give us back the money based upon our fees. This bill has now been amended to the point where we don't have to buy into all of that, which is good for us. There's another one out there called presumption eligibility, and this has to do with heart-lung disease. And this is, again, for public safety, for our firemen and our sheriff's crew. This is predominantly for the fire crew because they're going into buildings and whatever at some point in time outside of their retirement. There could be heart-lung issues, which now the state of Nevada or our insurance company has to pay. Now, we have to absorb that because their bill is going to come back to us. The question was, is that whether or not a person is out on that retires and 20 years later contracts either heart or lung disease, whether or not the state of Nevada is really, you know, presumptively required to pay the bill. I mean, in essence, that person who retires, there is no intermediary that says that they have pretty much behaved and not turned into a 10-pack-a-day smoker from the time they retired to the time that they get the disease. That is pretty much where Pulpac wants to go with this. They're getting some backlash from the unions, of course, because they don't want to give up on anything, but it's something that really needs to be looked at. Because it could be catastrophic as far as the state of Nevada. Pulpac has liability sitting out there for excess of $200 million, which may not be enough. Obviously, as these events occur and as these claims occur within Story County, obviously, then those will be paid for and we will have to pay for them. So it's a pretty important bill, but we don't really know where that's coming from because there's too much political maneuverment as far as movement on the collective bargaining issues. So one may be sacrificed for the other. We really don't have any idea on that one. And that's about all I have as far as the really important bills that were coming down the pipe.
Any questions?
As I recall, there was some language related to the fact that if the union wants more money for wages or benefits, the county can't afford it, then he can't afford it. So it helps keep the union under control in that fact.
Anything else?
I think we're good, sir.
Okay. Very good. Let's go ahead and move on to item number 14. This is discussion, possible action, review, and possible approval of a policy regarding refund of building permit fees.
I'll take this one, if I may, Mr. Chairman.
Right.
I'd like to say that this is a solution seeking a problem, but unfortunately we've had one, and one only in the 10 years that I've been working with Dean's office and Gary's office on permitting. And that is our plan review and permitting fees, especially in the building department, particularly in the building department, are really closely tied to the International Building Code. We deal with very, very large projects, and I'll start out by saying this has absolutely nothing to do with Tesla. In fact, Senate Bill 1 specifically gave us the ability to negotiate plan review and permitting fees with them along with some other elements. But the problem is we live in a Dillon's Rule state, and we have to look for ways to be able to provide refunds, particularly when there are challenges. About a year and a half ago, one particular company challenged, and their legal interpretations differed slightly from our legal interpretations. I will tell you, the International Building Code, I believe, is probably one of the most convoluted, difficult rabbit holes that you can ever want to wander or fall into. Definitions such as what really does or does not constitute real and a fixed property. So we, on one occasion so far, have had a challenge. The challenge has merit, and this is our path to resolve those types of challenges should they come up, both the pending one and ones in the future. Specifically, International Building Code in your staff report has a small error under staff summary. It should be section 109.6 of the building code. It says the building official is authorized to establish a refund policy. Well, we like it a little tighter than that, and in working with Keith Loomis, who I want to just give profound thanks. This looked like the impossible project from many perspectives because of the Dillon's Rule challenge. And Keith has just kept it simple, found the way, and been flexible enough to say we don't really want to give that waiver authority or that abatement authority, if you will, when there are protests to any one individual. So our policy is simple, and it's consistent with other policies and practices that we have. In this case, Dean would review it for the merits of what they're saying. And I'll give you an example where we have not done it, but we certainly could. A lot of times a business will build a 300,000-square-foot warehouse, and then, lo and behold, want to add 300,000 square feet right more on it. The plan review for that second 300,000 square feet, if it's identical to the first one, it's just a mirror, if you will, is very simple, and we can cut our time, we can cut our labor. So we may find ourselves in a couple of those needing to make a partial abatement of fees based on the reality. So in this case, the program would be Dean would review it and recommend it. She would look at it from a fiscal application, and then I would ultimately approve it or not approve it on a consistency application part. What have we done with others? So that's the policy, and again, I want to thank Mr. Loomis for his great work in getting this done.
And so, Pat, would this be for only the Department of Community Development?
It is so far. I want to look and see if we were to do it. There's only other one department that would happen, and that would be Fire District. But we have a look. They seem to be a little more defined. We've not had any challenges with them. But I'll speak with Gary on that, and if we need to, we'll have you guys look at this as a Fire District item as well.
Okay. Anyone like to discuss this item? The board members? It looks like if we don't have a policy to refund, we should have a policy to refund. Someone for a motion to approve a policy allowing refund of building permit fees from the Community Development Department.
I'll make a motion to approve producing a policy regarding the refund of building.
I'll second that motion.
All right. Any other discussion? Hearing none, it's been moved and second to approve. What did I just say? A motion to approve the policy allowing the refund of building permit fees by the Community Development Department. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And the motion carries. Okay, moving along now. Item number 15, discussion of possible action, the selection of David A. Pringle, CPA, LTD, as Story County Auditor for the fiscal year ended June 30, 2015. Mr. Gallagher?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Our current auditor, David A. Pringle, CPA, LTD, in my opinion, has done an excellent job in providing audit compliance, accounting, and auditing advice and financial statement presentation to Story County for many years now. Their work is professionally done, and their rate is more than reasonable. In many cases, questions, meetings, requirements by this county asking them for advice has been done at relatively little or no charge. I am recommending them as our outside auditors or our fiscal auditors for this upcoming year. And if anybody out there in the public have any questions, we'll be glad to take it.
Yes. Okay, that being said, anyone like to speak on this? Hearing none, pleasure of the board.
Mr. Pringle has always done us well. Make a motion.
Have a motion.
I'll make a motion to select David A. Pringle, CPA, OPD, as Story County Auditor for the fiscal year ending June 30th, 2015.
I'll second that motion.
And moving to second to approve the selection of David A. Pringle, CPA, for Story County. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And the motion carries. Moving along now to item number 16, discussion of possible action. Approve first reading of Ordinance 15-263, adding section 3.50.200 to Story County Code, providing for a pilot project for granting partial abatements of permitting fees to participants in a qualified project in Economic Diversification District Number 1, providing for other properly related matters. Mr. Morse.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Robert Morse for the record. We introduced a similar ordinance last meeting, and after discussions with Tesla, involving Mr. Whitten and myself, we've agreed on some changes that we would ask the board to go ahead and look at. The changes are from the ordinance that was introduced for the last meeting, and I've underlined and put them in italics. In the black and white version, you can tell those are the changes. In the staff report, I said they were in blue italics, but I think you can see which ones the actual changes. And so the main difference is the annual fees that we've agreed on in principle with Tesla, and so those new fees are listed. There was also a concern about how to cover permitting fees if the construction lasted longer than we expected, and so we've put in a new section E that covers that. And then I think I discussed that I wanted to put in section F last time when we introduced it. This is one of basically four agreements that we have ongoing with Tesla. There's going to be the government services agreement, which is still being negotiated. There is this ordinance. There's what is called the participation agreement, which allows the reimbursement of the property and use taxes to go back to Tesla. And there's an agreement with the state to administer the collection of the taxes. At this point, we expect that we may be ready to go forward with the remaining issues on May 5th. But as far as today, I would just ask that you introduce this ordinance for a first reading. Any questions?
I do have one question.
Sure.
I believe this fee structure allowed, see if I can explain this in my own mind here. This fee structure addresses first submittal plans for fees and structure, first submittal plan. But I noticed on, for example, Tesla, they'll resubmit more than one time. So does this fee structure then, are we allowed then to process additional fees as change orders come in on additional plans?
No is the answer to that question, and we did propose that for some time, and they were resistant to it, so we've opted to take a couple of different approaches. This, in essence, in some respects, is simply a staff allocation. Okay, we're saying, on average, we will make these services available to you this much. If you keep bogging the system down with resubmittals and changes, then it's just going to delay the process. So there's almost like a governor on there, if you will, that only lets so much go through so fast through either fire district or building. However, we also do have, I believe, in here
the
right to reopen and say, if you're not happy with the pace of permitting because of the resubmittals and the changes, then we need to reopen and talk about percentages.
That's the back door, because I believe they've been impacting us directly with all of these recent middles. Change order.
Yeah, I agree. And I might add, since it's somewhat related, that I got notified back to your question on partial abatements outside of the Tesla deal, that Fire District works directly under the authority of the Fire Marshal. So it's the Fire Marshal, the State Fire Marshal, that actually has final word in any of those appeals on those fees. So we should be good to go.
And I would just advise the board that when this comes back in the second reading, all the changes we made from the previous first reading are not going to be shown. It's just going to be a clean copy. So I just wanted to make sure the board was apprised of the progress as it's going along and can understand the changes that have been made.
Mr. McGuffey, do you have any questions?
We have.
No, I think this does answer the question about all the resubmittals of their plan.
We have sat down with both the department, sorry, Jack. We have sat down with both department heads and their fiscal staffs and outlined the mechanics of doing this and the fairness and equity in both departments. We're satisfied with it. And I might add in there, there also is kind of a generic government overhead markup, if you will, for legal, accounting, my involvement, anybody else's involvement in the process in the formulas that guides to the abatements.
Any public comment on this?
Is there a completion date?
If you'd like to ask a question, I'd like you to come up to the podium, sir, and identify yourself for the record. You can ask your question. We need to get you up here so we can get you on tape so that it's easier for the clerk to go ahead and transcribe. Go ahead and take the podium there.
My name is Greg McKendall. I own a project out in the Tribe Park. Is there a completion date for Tesla?
I'm not aware of one. I can tell you that since the provisions of Senate Bill 1 lasted 10 years and 20 years from the date of effect, these contracts that we're negotiating or documents we're negotiating generally have a tendency to end June 30th, 2024, which is when the property tax abatements go off schedule. As far as their proposed schedule of completion, they haven't shared that.
Was your question with the construction?
With the construction date.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I have a following question for that as well.
Okay.
Was it by the end of 2017? Wasn't that their proposed completion date?
Yeah, and I would tell you again, I mean, Tesla's very dynamic. I've mentioned that before. Things change up there. And they change frequently. So I would tell you, you know, we were looking at a three-year build-out that conceivably could be in production as early as fall of next year from their own statements that they've made to us. In full production, no. But full production may certainly change. So I'm not trying to dance around your answer, Greg. It changes, okay?
Has a traffic impact study been done when the completion date of Tesla arrives?
It has not. We're...
Because that could kill the park just as well as having Tesla there opening and doing business, because you can't get in and out now. So if you have 1,500, 2,000 people on each of their shifts leaving that park at the same time, getting in and out of the industrial center gets really, really tough.
We're working with NDOT and with Tesla on that to find funding sources. You know, now that USA Parkway is a state highway, that brings a whole other player to the table, and we're trying to address that.
Okay.
Any other questions?
I think I'm done.
Okay, thank you.
Good to see you. It's been a while.
Keep ahead. Ms. Barr, do you have your hand
up? Nicole Barr, Story County resident. Okay, just to get clear in my mind, the annual fees that are here are what we actually collect and get to keep. Correct?
Correct.
So this is the fee after the abatement. This is what we receive after we've abated the full amount, correct?
Correct.
So we don't know what that, the to and from, we don't know where the from is.
We don't at this point, we will, because we will still, through the permitting process, our average permits are based on valuations, okay? If this is going to be a $10 million project, the permit's going to result in X.
Right, right.
The plan review is going to result in 60% of X, actually. Mm-hmm. So we will know what we abate, but we will know as it goes through the process, and they give us valuations because we're requiring them to give us those values because we're required to report to the legislature annually for the amounts that we are abating.
Okay. So these numbers are going to change again?
These numbers will not. These are fixed for 10
years. These are fixed for...
These are what we will receive. Money in the bank.
Cash, money in the bank to us. So does this include the offset for the additional manpower, processes, headcount, et cetera?
Yes and no.
Okay.
Yes, as far as as it involves the plan review and permitting process. For instance, we increased staff in Dean's office, so it increased that. We had increased in Gary's office as well, so yes there, no in terms of staffing station 75 or more deputies or anything else.
Okay, is that going to get offset in another manner, or
yes.
Okay,
get offset by a general services agreement that is that really that last document that Bob Morris referred to that is being negotiated.
Okay, so the general services agreement does not include the items that are already offset for us in here.
That's correct.
Okay, so the budget then, budgets for this year and subsequent years will show in those departments, whether it's fire or building or planning, et cetera, the amount of that budget for that year in those departments that are being covered by an offset.
Okay. Since we have two different types of offsets, I want to stress this one. As far as this ordinance and these things,
yes.
Absolutely, yes. In fact, if you go to fire right now, and building for that matter, you'll notice large increases in the permitting and plan review fees.
Okay.
Okay. So those have been factored in because even though this document has not been finalized, I think Bob used the word we're in conceptual agreement or...
Yeah, conceptual agreement is a concept.
Everybody thinks it's fair. The offsets to staff station 75 specifically and two more cops, those are not factored in yet.
Okay.
Because we haven't
found. I just want to follow the process as it goes through because this is the front end of it and it ought to manifest itself in the budget process. And if you have a separate item that says, of my budget in building of $1 million, $200,000 is offset by this, then I, as a citizen reading that, goes, oh, okay, you really didn't increase. I mean, it got covered in another way.
Exactly.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Great. Anyone else? Any questions, commissioners?
If I may thank Mr. Morris, Mr. Chairman, he has been stellar in his, not only his representation, but in his support. I had questions whether I could do this by myself, and that answer is clearly no, and I thank Bob for, you know, his professional friendship throughout the process. He even worked, again, on his vacation. So.
Nice. Okay, at this time, I'm looking for a motion. To approve the reading, the first reading of this ordinance, 15.
I so move to introduce for the first reading ordinance 15-263.
No second on that?
I'll second that.
Moved and second to approve first reading of ordinance 15-263. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And the motion carries. Moving along now to item number 17, discussion and possible action, approval of the TRI infrastructure voucher in the amount of $9,893.50 payable to the developer agreement. Mr. Gallagher, is this your name?
Yes, Chairman, if I may do. Per NRS 2818.420 requirement to disclose a conflict of interest here on this item. The matter before the body affects my pecuniary interest and the Mustang, I'm sorry, the government of the center. And I believe this is a clear case of a disqualifying conflict of interest. I'm going to be abstaining for voting or entering the discussions on the matter.
Very good. Thank you, Vice Chairman. Okay. Who's taking the lead on this?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Periodically, infrastructure costs provided by the Tahoe Regional Industrial Park are incurred by our public-private park. This has been going on since 2000. We are catching up with the process. These costs are pre-approved by the Community Development Department as infrastructure costs and reviewed by myself and my staff as per our private our public-private developer agreement. The cost of this for the year ended 2012-2013 is $9,893.50. We have looked through each one of the invoices as presented, and we concur with the findings.
Very good.
And Mr. Chairman, just for notation, we also received notice from TRI's Chief Financial Officer last week, indicating that there were no reimbursable, which this is for the year 2000, 12, 2013, there are no reimbursable expenses for the year 2013-2014.
So. Very good. All right. Does anybody have any questions? You want to discuss this matter? Very good. Call for the question.
Make a motion.
Please.
I'll make a motion to approve the TRI infrastructure voucher in the amount of $9,893.50 payable for the development fee.
I'll second your motion. It's been moved and seconded to approve item 17. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. The clerk will note that Commissioner Gilman abstained from voting on this. Anybody need a break before we get into the tentative? Okay. Anyway, let's take about a 10-minute recess before we go into the tentative.